Hey guys, welcome to another episode of EngageCast, a podcast about riveting growth stories. It has been 8 episodes since we have started exploring the business effects of COVID-19 on several brands across India. We have learned how consumer empathy is the need of the hour and how different brands are shaping their strategies around it. In today's episode, we will be exploring the B2B side of the business. Priyam will be speaking with Naman Saraogi, co-founder of Reference.com, a market network for B2B service providers. Naman is a startup industry veteran and brings more than 10 years of experience with him. He was the head of product at FreeCharge, helping them reach their first 100K user. So let's hear from Naman what he has to say about the impacts of the pandemic on Reference.com.
Hi Naman, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey Priyam, hi. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I hope you are doing well. I hear that you are in Gujarat and things are not looking that good in Gujarat. So from one COVID warrior to another being in Maharashtra, I hope you are doing well.
Right. So personally, we are keeping well. The family is good. But I think at the city level, as you said, right, we're still struggling to, you know, flatten the curve. So. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Once again, thank you so much for doing this and helping us in our endeavor to understand a little bit more about the impact of COVID on businesses and sure. How marketers, entrepreneurs, and everybody who's dealing with it right now can make the most of this unfortunate situation. Sure. So the very first question that I have been asking everybody that has been on the show so far is to understand how COVID has impacted them directly. So do tell us a little bit, Naman, about COVID's impact on you as a professional, your business, and of course, the entire industry in which you operate in.
Okay. So we are an early stage company, right? We provide invoicing and payment solution to freelancers. Okay. And when I say early stage, we were in a very high growth mode. I mean, we were almost doubling our consumer base for the last 3 months before this COVID thing happened. So suddenly, when, you know, in end of March, when this whole announcement came in about lockdown, a lot of businesses got impacted. So as a, you know, a trickle down effect, there was no invoicing happening and there were new users being added to our system, right? Our current user base is not very frequent. They are more like 3 to 4 times in a month kind of users. Their return rate also reduced because they did not need to create any invoices, right? So personally, that is impacted. From a management point of view, what we realized is we were hiring a lot of people, right? And in early stage startups, this face-to-face interaction is very, very important. Also, because we don't have like a very mature onboarding system, say, where we could send out documents to the employees and say, you know, please read this and you are good to go, right? A lot of things happen ad hoc. A lot of roles are first-time hires, right? So if I'm hiring, suppose, say, a product manager, right? That's the first product manager in my team. If I'm hiring a customer support, probably it's the first customer support in my team, right? So I think that whole onboarding process, although it's very fancy to say, you know, remote working and everything, right? But those things can happen once all the parties are very mature, which may not be the case, right? It's maybe easier to hire a 35-year-old as a remote person, not easier to hire somebody straight out of college. So that way we did get impacted in the hiring bit also. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is what it is.
All right. So as a business owner, Naman, do you feel that COVID's impact has crept into your job profile as well? Is there something else or is there an evolutionary or any kind of adaptation trend that you have witnessed that you were not doing earlier, but you are doing now?
Okay. So I think particularly things like video calls were not very often, right? I mean, but now it is like very, very necessary to get on a video call. Okay. Those are like very small personal habits being changed. Sure. Okay. Sure. And, but the good part is now a lot of clients don't expect us to travel, right? Mm-hmm. Earlier, if we were closing some enterprise deal, it meant that I would travel, say, 1,000 kilometers and, you know, get into a cab for 2 hours and then, you know, get into a meeting. So that way we are safer. So that is a little change from how we work, how I personally work, right? But if you look at it from a business point of view, I think the whole market size has shrunk, right? And that means a lot because now our marketing is not working the way it was supposed to work. If I spend 100 rupees on something, I would expect, you know, that I would get a certain number of users. Although, sure. If you look at it particularly from digital marketing point of view, the inventory has increased. More people are spending time online, okay? But now lesser people need what we are making or lesser people need anything that is commercial, right? So even if the advertising is cheap, there are no users who want to come. It's almost like oil, right? Although oil is cheap, but there is nobody who needs oil right now, right? So it's very similar to that.
Awesome, awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that because my next question is related to your marketing strategy. You mentioned that you guys are an early stage startup and it is very, marketing is kind of like a make or break situation for a brand in a position such as yourself.
Right.
Now that you've mentioned factors like the market size itself is shrinking and there are other factors which have limited the impact of traditional marketing, how has your marketing strategy evolved right now?
Okay, so I'll, first we need to look at what is wrong when the market size shrinks. Okay, our matrix that we trained in January, February, right? Now that matrix has gone for a toss. If I say, I have a 90% conversion rate, I don't know if I really have a 90% conversion rate now.
Sure.
Okay, and the reasons are very different. If I had 10% dropout rate, today we were at peak, I think we faced a 40% dropout rate. Okay. And earlier, the reasons were obvious, right? At a 10% dropout rate, somebody would say, I did not get this feature. I had this problem. There was a bug, so I dropped out, right? Or something like that, right? Or maybe I found a better tool. I mean, that wasn't the case in our case, but maybe, right? But now people are like, I've gone out of business, right? So we were not prepared for that. That somebody would start creating invoices in January, February on a new tool, would go out of business in April, right? So, and that means a very different, so we have to be now selective. I mean, if our onboarding and, dropout management team, right, people who are sending out emailers, et cetera, to bring this churned users back, right? If they had, 10 calls to make in a day, now they have 40 calls to make in a day, right? And those other 30 calls are not adding any value, right? But we don't know which 30 these are. Out of the 40, which 30 are actually gone out of business and which 10 are actually in business, right? So I think overall our efficiency with respect to keeping the users where they are, right, or managing the regular process of onboarding, of acquisition, that has completely broken, right? So email marketing, for example, right? So there is higher percentage of open rates, there are higher percentage of click rates, but people are not converting. Now, when we ask them, it's more like, I did look at the tool. The tool was interesting, but I don't need it now. Okay. So yes, the emails are going to the right people, but at this moment, the tool doesn't make sense to them.
Right. Right. So now, because such a problem exists, Naman, it is going to be a big problem for a lot of other brands to solve as well, where there probably is a lack of demand, which is seasonal in nature, or probably there is demand, but supply is an issue. Or maybe supply is there, but probably liquidity is an issue. So all of these problems are going to arise. Now, I am assuming that consumer behavior is going to basically evolve a little bit once things are better and demand supply problems are sorted sometime in the future. Right. How do you work right now to reignite demand for the future?
So one important way to look at is what kind of users you're acquiring right now. Okay. Are you advertising on Facebook or are you advertising on Google? Now, difference is Facebook is more push-based marketing, right? Now, push-based marketing and a more blanket approach, which will not work right now, unless you are like a gaming company, right? But if you look at utility tools, right? You're a SaaS company, it has to be more pull-based, right? So your dollars should be spent right now. You should be spending on Google rather than on Facebook because Google really has the demand. Somebody's searching for what you have, right? For future, when you look at, right, I think it's time to build all the features, okay? If you're going to spend some money this month, spend it on your engineering team. Work on improving the product, okay? And now that you have lesser number of users means lesser things are breaking and, there is less firefighting happening on a day-to-day basis, right? Mm-hmm. So your engineers can be more concentrated creating long-term features, right? Also, there will be less fluff in the market, right? You might want to increase some vanity matrix. The whole vanity matrix has disappeared, right? So you can actually now concentrate on the core business and look at what will bring you revenue once the market opens. Because if the market opens and then there is no revenue, you have run out of excuses, honestly, right? And by then you'll also run out of money. Mm-hmm. So focus on something that is more revenue generating, that is more realistic, okay? I'll give you another example, right? For example, grocery companies, right? They are all going good, right? They don't need to offer discounts right now.
Sure.
So A, that helps them bring, improve their unit economics overall. Okay. But that what they also need to do is make sure that they are better than their peers right now. The demand is there. If you had to load test your systems, it is possible now, right? So, but once the lockdown opens and you are still going to tell me that, it's going to take you 3 days, 4 days for delivery, then you'll be doomed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Whatever customers you've acquired now with all die. Mm-hmm. Right? So your engineering team should be preparing for the future, saying, when this all opens up, we are going to enter into a very different scale, right? Whether your business was running right now or not, right? Either, if your business is not running right now, let's focus on revenue. If your business is running right now, it is going to be even better when the things open, right? You've acquired a whole new set of users, right? So work on improving your technology.
Awesome. Awesome. So I think the assumption is built on some sound logic. The fact that it's the best time right now to build on the product, assuming that once things are better, demand is going to be through the roof and it makes more sense to service those new users much better than peers. Definitely, it's a fantastic, fantastic Absolutely. Point, Naman. One connecting point to that, Naman, I'm going to ask is about a communication strategy. It has been a unique couple of months where we have seen some very interesting communication from brands. And I wanted to ask you if there is some kind of a noticeable change that you have witnessed with respect to consumer brands with their messaging post-COVID. And if there is something that you have noticed or witnessed, what is that new theme that everybody is harping on right now?
So I think health and hygiene is a major factor right now. Mm-hmm. It's a major thing, right? So what that means is if you look at the Indian economy particularly, right, a lot of is very unorganized, right? Even things that are food related, for example, right? Not all food outlets proper follow hygiene factors, right? Now that will come into play. Grocery deliveries, again, talking about hygiene. Hospitals will finally start talking about hygiene. If you're in a large city, you will not notice that, hospitals could be unhygienic, right? But in a smaller cities where there are very smaller clinics or, nursing homes that we call, right? They will need to become more hygienic and they'll need to communicate that because, when you make things more hygienic, it's going to cost you, right? The other day, I was looking at a home service company, right? Now, for every... So, they actually provide handyman services. If they've added a 50 rupees cost for every visit, just so that they can provide the, personal safety equipment to the service boy, right? Their gloves and sanitizers. So, the cost is going to increase. So, A, your unit economics is also changing from that point of view. And you have to now communicate about that cost, that this is for your better, right? If you end up increasing the cost and not communicate that, it doesn't help, right? Because, it did not help you get new customers, right? So that communication around all the safety measures is important, okay? Second, I think over the top and, people are not trying to mimic celebrities right now, okay? That will change a little, okay? A more feature-driven marketing will probably come into play, right? Rather than, those seven sins that I keep talking about, right? Where there is less greed-based marketing or there is less lust-based marketing, but there is more feature-based marketing right now. People have limited money, so they want to know exactly where they are spending it.
Awesome. One point that I want to add and also want to check with you, Naman, is the fact that you mentioned a couple of things about greed-based marketing going away because of the way consumers have evolved due to the pandemic. Right. And we are witnessing a lot of empathy in the messaging from brands that is out there. Everybody is trying to humanize their message a lot. We keep hearing from brands that we are in this together, stuff like that. Now, is this a theme which is here to stay, or 6 months or 12 months or 18 months down the line, things are going to become back to normal, back to square one?
So it will come back to square one. Okay, we don't know when, and that is going to be very industry specific. Okay, if consumerism has to come in play, if the economy has to grow at the same rate, right, then we will have to come back to all our basic instincts of trying to get more for lesser, right, trying to cut corners. That will come into play, but the normal will be a new normal. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So maybe say, very hypothetically, I don't know if a matrix could be put here, but say 10% of people were actually bothered about hygiene earlier. Now, during the pandemic, 50% will be bothered. But even after the pandemic, we'll at least see 15 to 20% being bothered about the pandemic, about hygiene, right? So, and they will be able to, they will be willing to shell more dollars just to make sure that things are safer, right? So the new normal will probably change from 10% to 20%, okay? But whatever you're seeing during the pandemic, I think, you know, it will return to a mean level, right? This is kind of extreme, you know, you can't always be focused on this kind of marketing because otherwise you cannot drive new products home.
True, fair point. So while we're on that topic, what do you think is the best user engagement strategy right now for brands?
Okay, so from respect to user engagement, right? If I look at digital brands, I think it should be about letting your users know about more features that you have, okay? A lot of times when I say particularly use SaaS tools, right? Now that I'm exploring all these SaaS tools because, you know, I need more of it, I realize that, oh, this other SaaS tool that I was using, that feature is already there in my current SaaS tool. Maybe it's just about switching on a plugin or, you know, just about switching on an option, right? So if I look at from respect to user engagement, educating the user about your tool is important, right? If I look at from a consumer brand point of view, educating the user about your features. Okay, we generally see this in Amul, right? Now this brand isn't talked about, its brand has always talked about, you know, their ingredients, right? And saying how healthy this is, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of things will happen in more places, right? So Zoom, for example, now needs to talk about security. It needs to talk about how many users it can handle. It doesn't matter if some celebrity is using Zoom or not. Right now it doesn't matter, right? So engagement with respect to educating more about my product, that will be important.
Fantastic. A lot of other folks who we have been talking to, they have all echoed the same sentiment. So definitely is one of the most crucial key themes right now. And I think it's going to extend into the near future as well. Now, if I had to prioritize with respect to my marketing and my engagement,
right.
If I am a marketer who has, of course, all the problems of a marketer in times of COVID, which is reduced funds, the old traditional marketing strategy being considered very tone deaf. What are the top three priorities for me right now with respect to my marketing and my engagement strategy? What are the three critical things I need to nail down?
Okay. So with respect to marketing, I think just make your, and COVID or not, I mean, just make your marketing more efficient. Okay. Start measuring everything. Start measuring every dollar that is going out. Okay. And see if it you know, converts into a meaningful matrix or not. Okay. Absolutely. Something like, you know, my brand had X many, you know, users reach on Facebook, or, you know, I had so many visitors on the site. Those things should matter less to you. Look at your end metrics. Start measuring every dollar with respect to your end metrics. Okay. That's the one major thing that you should be changing. Right?
Fantastic.
Okay. More people are now starting to explore digital, but they are not, you know, digital natives, right? For people like us who started using computers, say when we were 12, right? There are a lot of 40-year-olds coming online, trying to explore an online tool. And this is probably their first SaaS tool that they are using. So we actually have customers who you know, call up and they don't know how to use our tool. Okay, but they've been using an invoicing system. Somebody in their office has been using an invoicing system, but now they need to use it, right? So again, my point too about user education, stop assuming that your user should already know about it. Stop assuming. So the other day I saw my mom, you know, she was participating in a satsang over a Zoom call, right? Now Zoom team wouldn't imagine that a non-techie would use a Zoom, right? And she's looking for buttons that she generally looks for on a WhatsApp call, right? And she finds it very complicated, saying, why are there so many buttons on Zoom, right? Why? So you now need to understand from a user's point of view, maybe there are three different persona of user. Earlier you were targeting only one, right? And the messaging has to be different for all three. It's now you have, because again, you know, there are more people identifying what is happening, right? Earlier, assume, you know, say 8 years ago, 9 years ago, if our parents logged into Facebook for the first time, we were there for them, right? We were explaining it to them how to do it. Now people are trying to explore on their own, right? If there was a new SaaS tool being adopted in a company, there would be somebody, some kid who would be super smart and who would, you know, tell you how to use it, right? If 10 people have to adopt it in a company, some intern would go around and, you know, tell everybody how to use it. Now that is not there. Now you have to get on a Zoom call, talk to a colleague probably feel embarrassed that, oh, I don't know how to use this simple tool, right? So from a marketer's point of view, you have more work to do now, right?
Making and things more intuitive.
Yes. So again, there are in certain tools, you know, your market size has increased suddenly, right? A Zoom, a Slack, for example, right? A Sana, for example, your market size has increased, but the same messaging is not working. So you'll see a lot of signups and then even more dropouts. You have to work on that retention piece, you know, and one strategy will not work for everyone.
Superb, superb. I completely agree with that, especially about ensuring that these tools are not counterintuitive. The fact that market size has increased, that's a great point. Which brings me to one of the last questions, Naman, for you. Of course, previously we had seen these hyper-funded companies using the massive bank strength to use acquisition as a growth strategy, which is fair. Now it's going to be a little bit difficult because the market situation isn't the best right now and liquidity is drying up and people are becoming very cautious about spending money. Discretionary spends are dipping and we don't really know what kind of an economic revival timeline we are in for. So during this time, the focus slowly shifts back to retention.
Right.
Theoretically, how important do you think user retention is now and of course going forward in 2020 and beyond? And of course, what can a brand do which will ensure that their users keep them in back of their mind and of course continue to use them now or in the future?
Okay, so user retention should always be the key, right? If you've been acquiring users but you've not been able to retain them, it means there is some kind of mismatch with respect to your marketing communication and what your product actually delivers. Okay, assuming if I'm a e-commerce company, right, I could acquire more users giving discounts. Okay, and when I was giving those discounts, the user could wait for say a week to get something delivered, right? Now when only essentials are required and only essentials can be ordered, right, even if you give discount and you can't deliver the stuff because your infra is broken, right, or your infra is not meant to handle such a scale, right? So your whatever marketing dollars you are spending, that will not make sense, right? Now again, with respect to retention also, you know, when I came to you, did you offer me what you promised? Okay. That is the core idea. If that is being done, right, your retention will happen. Okay. Now on the second level, what we should be focusing on, are we communicating the right thing? Okay, maybe the grocery will not be delivered for the next 3 days. Can I communicate that correctly, right? Can I, again, the engagement is also about keeping the user informed about what the service levels are going to be, right? And how, and people have empathy, you know, brands are showing empathy, even the consumers are showing empathy. So I understand if something is going to be delayed, right? But now is the time to at least communicate, okay? Sure. Don't leave me, you know, uninformed, right? There is already so much fear and uncertainty. Don't leave a simple thing like a 250 rupees grocery that has to be delivered and there is unpredictability with respect to that.
True.
And that is going to be in a lot of things where engagement is going to be about, I talked about, you know, communicating the right features, right, to the users and educating them. Now it is also about every transaction, keeping the user informed. Right?
Over-communication.
Then over-communicate, and that is absolutely fine. That is absolutely fine, you know, to do it. You know, when we say over-communication, it sounds a little wrong, maybe, right? It sounds negative, but that is the right thing to do right now. Keep the user informed so that you have lesser number of support calls coming in from the users. Now, if you're facing a downtime, inform beforehand that you're facing a downtime, right? A lot of marketers think, oh, why should we inform? You know, even people who didn't know will now come to know, right? But that is a better thing to do because people have that empathy right now. Okay, maybe they're, you know, there's a, you know, guy who's handling the server, he's not at office, right? So he can't be managing things at full efficiency, right? The guy who's managing the warehouse is not there. So things are now down, right? So there is empathy from both the ends. And this we see in a lot of unorganized businesses, right? Where you tend to know the business owner and you have empathy both ways, right? But with when you look at a large organization, right? The whole empathy thing is lost because now you're not talking to humans, but you're talking to systems, right? But if systems are meant to inform you correctly, you know, without having to dig deeper, I think that works, right? And then I'm going to remember this brand as a safe brand to work with. Okay.
Absolutely.
Because at the back of my mind, if something is very unpredictable, right? I'm very fearful, right? If I'm order, say, food from a particular app and, you know, there is no information for the next 1 hour versus the other app, which keeps me informed that, oh, that even things like, you know, the driver is going to be late by 1.5 hours. That is fine, right? I understand. But that communication has to go out. And only then I'll think that this is a safer place to work with.
Absolutely. Honest communication that builds trust. And I think we are seeing a lot of that already. Fantastic, Naman. That brings me to the last question that I want to ask you today. And I have asked this question to a lot of people. I've been reading about this a lot. Do you think we are headed towards a certain work from home future?
Yes. If 1% were trying work from home, probably 10% will try it now. Okay. Managers will be more, you know, willing to give you permission to work from home. If, you know, people do not misuse that, right? In India particularly, we have, you know, work from home generally means, you know, please do not, you know, deduct my salaries, but I'm not going to work today, right? And I'm going to be there on call a couple of minutes, you know, if you need, right?
Sure.
So work from home, people will be more tolerant towards this, okay? A lot of meetings that you had to travel probably, you know, a couple of hours to, because that was the norm, right? If you're doing an enterprise sale, somebody expects you to come to their office and, you know, deliver a pitch or something, right? Because the champion in that company is also wants to look good when he's brought in his manager to the meeting, all that, right? People will be more empathetic towards, you know, not showing a, you know, flesh and blood presence, okay? Maybe a face on a screen should be enough, okay?
Awesome,
but
awesome.
The younger people should understand that this is a big opportunity for them to hold their integrity very high, right? And when it means work from home, you actually work from home. Right?
Absolutely.
Otherwise, what is going to happen is all the work from home people will be kept on contract, or they'll be kept on hourly, you know, billing rather than a retained, you know, salary based payments.
Mm-hmm.
So, but and now is the time to actually show your integrity and say, you know, see, you know, you don't, I'm not there physically, but still your work is being delivered and I'm still as much dependable, right? The same thing that we expect from a brand, an employee should also be delivering. Then this whole work from home thing will work. Travel in a Mumbai local for hours, I may not need to travel in a Bangalore traffic for hours, right? Cool. And we might see a lot of good happening, you know, in society in general.
Absolutely.
All that, if we hold our integrity high and we don't lie to our managers, we don't lie to our clients, right? Work from home will work.
Fair play. Absolutely. I think a lot of those things we are already seeing. Changes are happening in the way people behave, most definitely. And I hope that is that becomes a reality, because the impact it has had on society, the world, pollution has dropped, and cities are becoming decongested. So all good things are happening. Let's just hope that continues. One last question. It's a bit unrelated, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on this. What economic revival timeline do you foresee, Naman? Is it going to be 6 months from now, 18 months from now, 2 years from now?
6 months, definitely not. Okay. 18 months to 2 years, and it's new industries will, you know, take birth. Some old industries will die. Okay. Assuming if you were talking about carpooling, I'm not sure if carpooling will work. But definitely car ownership will go down. People will still commute. So maybe, you know, a new kind of transport will come into play. Maybe cycling will become the new norm. Okay. There will be a new kind of economy that will take birth. If you look at the overall matrix, say GDP is the matrix, okay, or your overall consumption data, right? That will take a lot more time to come into picture, and it will come out in a different, with a different mix, right? So if my health expense was 5% earlier, it probably will be 15%. Right? If eating out costed me $5, it will probably cost me $10, because particularly in India, right, those hygiene factors were not coming into play. Right?
True.
If transport was $10, it might fall to $5 because there is lesser transport happening. But the transport will also become less efficient, because if there were 4 people sharing a car, probably only 2 will share a car, at least for the, you know, the time, you know, immediately after Corona. Right? But we will see a change in mix of how that money is being spent, right? If an urban working couple was spending more on restaurant food and lesser on groceries, I think that will change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and that will mean a lot of things are changing.
Interesting.
Probably more people will, so the extremes from the mean will not be as much extreme, right? If, you know, say, you know, your household help was earning 10,000, you are earning 2 lakhs, right? Probably she will go a little higher and you will come a little down, right? If, even if the economy has to come back to the same place where it was.
Awesome. Awesome. Great observations, Naman. And that brings us to the close of this episode. Thank you so much for giving your time and your candid insights. I had a really good time. Thanks again.
Thank you, Priya.
That's it for today's episode. I hope you liked this podcast. If you did, please don't forget to share it with your friends, family, colleagues, or whoever can benefit from the insights. We will be back again shortly. Until then, you know what you have to do. Stay home, stay safe, take care, and I'll see you soon.